The Queen's premier guards in custody, Gunnar argued. She'll come. We are through being snubbed by the kingdoms. My mother nodded in agreement. And now the citizens are expecting it. Did you hear the murmurs from the crowd? Mason sighed, as if reluctant to concur. It's spread to the whole town by now, Jace. Getting her to come might help the leagues back off. And they were all there today, Priya said, supposedly paying their respects, but mostly licking their chops. Make her come. It was my father's last request. That's what they were all thinking about. Him, what he wanted, what he never got. When we had gotten word of the new treaties, my father wasn't concerned at first. Our world had nothing to do with the outside one. We didn't care about them and what they did. We had always been isolated. But when heavily guarded settlement caravans began crossing our territory en route to other places, he took note. I told my father he needed to go to Venda and speak with the Queen like every other kingdom. We are not a kingdom, he had raged. We're a dynasty. We were here long before Venda, and we bend a knee to no one. She will come to us. And he sent a letter telling her to come to Tor's Watch. There was no reply. It was a mistake, because now it was an insult that made him look weak. It was an insult he never forgot. Neither had the rest of my family. Making the Queen come here was as much about restored pride as making the leagues back off. But it could lead to other problems. Bigger ones. We can't take the Queen's guard hostage. If she came at all, it would be with an angry army behind her. Is that really what we want? Not if the letter is worded carefully, commending us, Gunnar argued. Titus snorted. Which I'm sure he's already written. No, I answered. We don't need a queen's acknowledgement to be legitimate or to control those encroaching on our territory. There are challenges every time there's a shift in power or a weakness is perceived. We'll show our strength as we always have.
Then what do we tell people when they ask when the queen's coming? Priya asked.
I shook my head, blowing out a long, angry breath. You should have kept quiet, Gunnar. Why'd you have to go shoot off your mouth? Gunnar pounded his fist on the table and stood. Because she's Ratan. The town's been buzzing about how she threw you up against a wall and brought you to your knees. They saw it with their own eyes. A padre on his knees with a knife at his throat. You think dismissing that as a mere misunderstanding is going to erase their doubts? And believe me, they have them. They needed something big to hold on to, and I gave it to them. Our angry gazes remained locked, the silence long and stifling. Arguments around the table were not unusual. That was one of the reasons we held meetings behind closed doors, so our differences were aired in privacy. But once we walked out, we were a unified front. That was one of the things that kept us strong.
What about Beaufort? Aram asked. He's made big promises. Is he ever going to cough up the goods?
It's a long-term investment, Gunnar told him. Father knew Beaufort couldn't produce for us overnight. He's getting close.
It's been almost a year, Priya said. As he and his friends drink up our goodwill and wine, I don't like it. Playing with the ancients' magic is like playing with fire.
But it will secure our position with every kingdom on the continent, not just the leagues, I reminded her. And it will keep us and our interests safe, Mason added. Trade could triple. Jelaine grunted.
If he ever follows through.
He will,
my mother said firmly. There was more that we hoped to achieve than just security, but these were only more promises. Sometimes I thought that was all my father was trying to give her when he gave Beaufort Sanctuary.
Hope. Until then, she went on, we need to do something now, Jace. We can't wait for promises to be fulfilled. The wolves have left their calling cards, 6 suspicious fires in as many nights.
Could it be the Ratan who were with her? Mason asked.
I got Tiago's hidden message loud and clear, and knew when he claimed he had them in custody that they were still on the loose. The fact that 2 Ratan had gone into hiding was suspicious and made speaking in front of the third one more risky.
Where were they hiding and why? I didn't like it, but my gut told me that destroying homes and businesses with fires was not a Ratan tactic, and scaring the citizenry was definitely the wolves' approach. I don't think it's the Ratan who did it, but we need to find them. They're around somewhere, maybe even hunkered down at that Venden settlement. I know enough about them already to know they wouldn't run off too far with one of their own missing. Samuel, Aram, take a crew out to the settlement tomorrow and sniff around.
We already did that. We turned up nothing.
Do it again. The first time they were expecting a visit. This time they won't be. We also have to find out who paid labor hunters up front to come stir trouble.
Think it was Paxton?
Priya asked, her tone filled with distaste. He had always been sickeningly sweet to her, and it made her dislike him all the more. I suspected that he saw Priya and marriage as a way back into the Ballinger family, and its power. Could be, I answered, not sure myself, but I knew Paxton hated labor hunters too, and I wasn't sure even he would stoop that low.
Or it could be a love letter from any of the leagues, Jelaine said. They've seen the arena prospering and are hungry for a bigger piece of it. I hear them grumbling when they come into the office looking for their cuts. Truco's hawker practically ignites every time.
I looked at Mason. Find out. However you have to do it, whoever you have to strong arm or bribe, find out who paid off the hunters. Concentrate on Truco and his crew. Check with Zane, too. See if he's seen any unusual activity. Zane had a sharp eye for faces and logged all deliveries at the arena. As for the fires, Titus, post more guards on every incoming artery, day and night, and tell the magistrates that all new faces are suspect.
And how do we address doubts? Gunner asked. He wouldn't let it go.
But then he had heard the buzzing and I hadn't. Gunner might be more impulsive than me, but he did have a good ear. I'll make myself more visible this next week. The Patre is not cowering on his knees for anyone. I'll make a show of confidence and strength. We all will. Uncles, aunts, everyone. Tell them. Everyone walks the streets of Hell's Mouth this week. The Ballingers still run this town and keep it safe.
What about her?
The very Ratan who took me down walking the streets of Hell's Mouth with me? It could blow up in my face, but it could also reinforce my claim that it was a mere misunderstanding. And if any leagues were skulking, it would be a clear message that a great power was not moving in on us, but instead recognizing our authority. Given a few weeks, doubts and fears would be calmed and everyone would forget about the queen coming.
She'll walk too. With me.
My mother told me not to cry. She told me not to forget kindness. She told me to be strong. She told me to believe in tomorrow. Every day I try to remember what else she told me. Something about shoes. Something about birthdays and baths. Something about whistling and roses. I cannot remember what she said. I was only 8 when she died. I hope the things I've forgotten don't matter. Miandre, 13. Chapter 20, Kazi.
I soaked in a tub of luxurious, hot water. The bath chamber was excessively large, as was the tub. Sweet lavender oil swirled on top in a shimmering, bubbled tapestry. My toes wiggled beneath the surface, reveling in the decadent, silky oil slipping between them. Elise had lit a candle in the corner and left me a plate of cheese, flatbread, and berries to nibble on, while she scouted out some other clothes for me to wear. If this was being in custody, I was all for it. There was no reason I couldn't soak up the Ballinger hospitality while I went about my work. Jace asked Elise to escort me here while he went directly to a meeting with his family. I was sure after his absence they had a lot to catch up on, including me. His family had walked behind us on our return to Tor's watch, and I felt their eyes on my back with every step. They were as protective of him as he was of them. Jace was quiet the whole way, but his hand rested on the small of my back because no doubt Paxton and others watched as we departed. As soon as we were through the gates of Tor's watch, his hand fell and he gave orders for me to be escorted elsewhere. He didn't say goodbye, and I had to silently applaud him on how well he massaged appearances. But it wasn't appearances when he embraced Lydia and Nash. Something about that moment circled back through my head again and again. The tenderness. That was real. Some parts of Jace were... I slipped beneath the water, scrubbing my scalp, wishing hot water could wash away not just dirt, but these past days, too. When the viewing was over and the tomb door was finally pushed shut, the family remained stoic. But their eyes glistened and his mother's eyes puddled with tears, her stony facade cracking at last. I found myself envying the finality of a door shutting, a certainty that I would never get. I broke the surface and gasped for a breath. Warm candlelight danced on the wall, and the only sound was the gentle sloshing of the water. I lifted my foot, listening to the drips cascading down, and surveyed my clean, pickled toes and the scabs that still circled my ankle like a thorny wreath. A matching wreath circled Jace's ankle. The chain was gone now, but the connection still jingled through corners of my mind. I stood and rinsed with the pitcher of fresh hot water Elise had left on the table for me. The thick white robe that was laid out was luxurious too, and I brushed it to my cheek before shrugging it on. Wren loved soft things. She would relish this as much as me, if she and Sinove were here. Were they? Or were they in hiding, waiting for me to show up? That was the first thing I'd have to find out. When I left the bath chamber, it felt strange not to have Jace within a few feet of me. Strange not to hear his footsteps, his voice. And I found myself glancing to the side out of habit, expecting him to be there. It was surprising how quickly habits could form, and I wondered how long it would take for them to disappear. Then a faint voice inside me whispered, "Is he a habit you really want to disappear?" "Yes," I whispered back. Yes was the only answer I could afford. His bed had heavy, dark curtains that could be drawn, like a tent, only better. A perfect enclosed cave for sleeping. I think I loved it more than the tub. Heavy drapes covered the windows, and the walls were covered with polished wood panels on three sides. Another wall was full of books. Everything about it was dark and luscious. Elise returned with borrowed clothing that she thought would be closer to my size than Jelaine's dress, and told me my other quarters were ready. "Thank you, but I'll be staying here. This chamber suits me." She paused, quirking her head, as though I hadn't quite understood her. "But this is the Patre's room." "I'm aware of that. I'm sure he'll be as comfortable in the guest quarters as I would be." She frowned, giving me a chance to change my mind. I remained firm. "I'll let him know," she said and left. She was passing this battle on to Jace. The guards he had posted at the end of the hall were an amusing touch, but I wasn't going to be put away in a room that would certainly be more restrictive than this one. This room had four windows, not to mention that Jace had all kinds of items to pilfer. I had already found a forgotten grooming kit in the bottom of his wardrobe, with a long, thin tool that could be useful for many things besides grooming. a small black satin bag that had probably once contained an expensive gift became a sleek, discreet pocket tied beneath my clothes. I was sure the nooks and corners had more to offer, but mostly I simply liked his dark, cave-like bed. I wanted to crawl into it now and draw the curtains tight. I went to the bookshelf and pulled a thick volume out. It was carefully handwritten, the penmanship itself mesmerizing, gracefully writing across the page in bold strokes like horses with wings. I replaced the book and my hand skimmed along the spines of the others as I thought about the stories Jace had told me. Breida's tears, Hattusha's lost horses, Neandre and the first Ballingers, and I wondered if he had read them here. A knock startled me from my thoughts. Yes?
It's Jace.
My pulse jumped like a snared rabbit, and I paced several steps, trying to shake it off. I pulled the robe tighter around me. I'm not dressed, I called.
I need to talk to you.
I quickly combed my wet hair with my fingers. Come in. He opened the door hesitantly. He had properly bathed and changed this time, shaved all the stray stubble, and a crisp white shirt accentuated his burnished skin, bronzed by days in the sun. His blonde hair was trimmed and combed back. He paused, looking at me, but said nothing. Unwelcome emotions surged through me, as if a bit of that world we had left behind had somehow slipped through the door with him. He took a few steps forward, his gaze never leaving mine.
I'm sorry, Gazi,
he finally whispered.
I'm sorry I didn't tell you.
He was only making things worse. You owed me nothing. I know that now. I was a means to an end. Get me here with as little fuss as possible and maybe get something out of it along the way.
It wasn't like that.
Then how was it, Jace? There were miles, miles that you could have come clean and told me where we were really going. All those times,
what about you? You had my ring all that time and didn't tell me?
How did you get it? You're welcome, Jace Ballinger. I wasn't expecting a thank you. Kazi! He shook his head and stepped impossibly closer, his hand lifting, gently stroking the wet strands of hair from my cheek, then cupping it, everything about his touch familiar but new, and my skin was instantly on fire, wishing for more. His eyes searched my face, and slowly he leaned in, his lips bare inches from mine. Heat swirled through me like a summer windstorm. You are too close now, Kazi. Don't cross this line again. But I wanted to, more than I had wanted to the first time, because now I knew what was on the other side of that line. I knew a side of Jace that I hadn't before, a side hidden beneath everything else, the tenderness that lay there. I knew what his lips tasted like on mine. I knew how he made me feel, and I wanted to feel it all again. But my head spun with other thoughts, too. Know what is at stake. Just before his lips met mine, I turned my head. What do you want this time, Jace? He stiffened at my clipped words, and his hand returned to his side.
Dinner is in 2 hours. That's all I wanted to tell you. I'll come back to get you once you're dressed.
He turned to leave, but when he reached the door, I stopped him. Your ring was in the hunter's vest. He faced me again, waiting for the rest of my explanation. I'd seen him up in the driver's seat patting his pocket every few minutes. That's a sure sign of a treasure within. When I leaned in to get the keys, I grabbed that, too.
I didn't see you take it.
You weren't meant to, I thought, but my reply was only a shrug.
And you didn't give it to me because...
I did give it to you, Jace. I gave it to you when it mattered. The opulence wasn't overt. There were no gilded moldings, no gleaming marble floors, no ornate crystal chandeliers or servants dressed in impressive uniforms as I had seen in palaces in Roh Lao and Dalbrek. Simplicity seemed to rule here, but the expansive stone walls, wooden floors, and massive iron chandeliers exuded a wealth of their own, something sure and confident and ageless. Instead of Jace, it was his sister who had come to get me and take me to dinner. "Jace is busy," she explained. She introduced herself as Priya, the oldest sibling. She wore a sleeveless dress and her upper arm was tattooed with the wing of an eagle. Unlike earlier today at the entombment when none of the family wore weapons, I noted that she now wore a low-slung belt with a dagger at her side. Was this the usual attire for dinner, or a message to me? "Did something come up for him?" I asked. "That is for Jace to tell you, not me." Her curt reply made it obvious she was not happy with my presence, nor with being saddled with this chore. We walked silently until she stopped abruptly midway down the hall and faced me. She was taller than me, and her expression was undeniably hostile. I anticipated something unpleasant, and I hoped she would not draw her dagger, because I really did not want to hurt her. It could cause all kinds of complications. "Do you care for my brother?" she asked, a crease deepening between her brows, and it dawned on me what her iciness was all about. Protectiveness ran hot in the Ballinger blood. "No, I do not care for your brother, at least not in the way I think you're suggesting. We have reached an understanding, and that is all." I thought she'd be pleased by this answer, that her brother was not entangled with one of those distasteful Venden rattan, but her expression only darkened. "But the way he kissed your cheek and looked at you." She was stubborn, just like her brother. "Surely you, Priya, can discern a show when you see one. Your brother doesn't care one rat's whisker for me either. We were only working together in the face of Paxton's clear effort to plant doubts about Jace's character. And it is apparent, even to me, that Paxton is the kind of trouble no one needs." Her eyes narrowed. "I'm more than able to discern a show when I see it, and I've seen my brother with plenty of girls. But I also know I saw something in him that wasn't like my brother at all." She fingered her dagger. "Don't do it," I thought, "or you'll be sorry and so will I." She leaned closer and said, "Let's just call this a friendly warning. If you hurt my brother, I'll make sure that you regret it." She stepped away and I breathed with relief, sliding the knife I gripped behind me back beneath my bodice. "Friendly warning accepted," I said. It wasn't just an idle threat. I believed she would do her best to make good on her word. When we arrived at the dining room, Jace, Mason, Gunner, and Titus weren't there yet, apparently still busy, but the rest of his family was there, talking and laughing, as Nash tried to stand on his hands. They didn't notice Priya and me standing in the doorway. Besides the immediate family, Priya pointed out their uncle, aunt, and two cousins. 12 of us already, but the dining room was large and could clearly hold many more. It was the many more that I wondered about. Where were Ren and Sinove if they were in custody? And the captain we searched for was definitely not among those present. I had a clear description of his distinct features. Tall, square-shouldered, thick black hair, with a cleft chin and a small moon-shaped scar over his left brow from where he'd been kicked by a horse. As the queen had said, if only he'd been kicked a little harder. "Is this everyone at Tor's Watch?" I asked. "Not nearly, but we don't eat with everyone. Only family and sometimes close friends. And of course, our guests join us from time to time. Her message was clear that I didn't fit in with the former and had only provisional status on the latter. But at least now I knew that others were somewhere here at Tor's watch. Within seconds, Nash and Lydia, only 6 and 7 and overflowing with curiosity, dashed over and asked the first awkward questions.
Are you and Jay's sweethearts?
Their mother jumped in quickly. That's an impolite thing to ask, Lydia. I'm only a guest, I said, here to pay my respects for your father's passing. But Jelaine said,
I said nothing, Nash.
Jelaine cut in sternly, except that Jace's friend was joining us for dinner. Nash's head swiveled instantly back to me.
Then are you our friend too?
His and Lydia's eyes were wide and innocent and not part of this game the adults played. Everyone waited expectantly. I knelt so I was eye level with Nash and Lydia.
Of course I am, I answered, taking their hands in mine.
I'm pleased to make your acquaintance, Nash Ballinger, and yours too, Lydia. Further introductions were made. Each extended a cautious hand to me. Now that I had faces to put to the names that Jace had already mentioned, it was much easier to remember them. First, the twins, Samuel and Aram, who were impossible to tell apart. Both had dark brown hair that brushed their shoulders, dark eyes, and easy smiles. I made an effort to find some distinguishing mark, and could only find a temporary one. A scratch on the back of Aram's hand. Next, I met Jace's uncle Caswin and aunt Dolise, and their boys, Braddock and Trey. Lastly, their Lynn, Jace's mother, with whom I had already had an eye-to-eye moment at the entombment, stepped forward and introduced herself. The tight coils she had worn earlier today were pulled free, and her blonde hair hung in loose waves around her shoulders now, softening her appearance. She seemed too young to be the mother of this extensive brood. She directed me to a seat at the table. The tone of the room had shifted, reserved and controlled, but polite. I had helped Jace today, but they still weren't quite sure what to make of me. Was I friend or foe?
Your quarters are comfortable?
Berlin asked as if trying to fill in the silence.
Yes, quite. Thank you.
I'm sure it will be good to sleep in a bed again, Jelaine said.
Yes, it will,
especially Jace's little cave. Lydia sat up on her knees and leaned across the table asking softly, thinking the others wouldn't hear.
Did you two kiss?
Lydia, Berlin said firmly. Her innocent question pinched something painful inside me. Many times, Lydia, I wanted to say. 100 times, and every kiss was better than the last. I still taste his lips on mine. I still feel his breaths as my own. Maybe that I could never say those words aloud is what hurt. More words that would have to remain beneath the surface, crowding for room with all the rest.
She's at that age, Verlin said apologetically. Always full of questions.
I smiled. It's a good age. Questions are important. Jelaine looked at me expectantly, as though she still hoped I would answer. I didn't.
Jelaine has a beau,
Nash said proudly.
No, I do not, Nash.
I watched Jelaine's frustration with her loose-lipped sibling grow.
But Fertig asked you to marry him,
Lydia countered.
And I haven't said yes,
she answered between gritted teeth. Yet, Priya mumbled under her breath. Thankfully, the first course was brought in by Aunt Delise, and it provided a welcome distraction for both me and Jelaine. A servant followed with two large baskets of bread. I remembered Jace saying that his aunt did most of the cooking for the family. She set a large tureen of soup on the table, and Uncle Caswin began filling bowls and passing them. I was surprised we were starting without everyone present.
"Will Jace and the others be joining us?" I asked.
"Jace said he might be a little late,"
Aram answered.
"He and the others were called away with business."
"And my friends?" I asked. "Jace said they were guests here too. Will they be coming?"
"I haven't seen anyone else here," Nash said.
"Me either,"
Lydia chimed in. A cluster of quick, tight glances were exchanged between the older Ballingers.
"I believe you're mistaken," Berlin answered. "They're being accommodated somewhere else, not here."
"But we'll let Jace know that you asked," Samuel said. "Maybe he can bring them over tomorrow."
"Sure he can." They were a finely tuned machine, working together and finishing one another's thoughts. The only wrenches in the works were Lydia and Nash. I was feeling more certain that Ren and Sinove were free and safe. Suddenly, my appetite doubled. When everyone was served, Verlin said a prayer to the gods, not unlike the acknowledgement of sacrifice that was given at Sanctum Hall meals. But here, no platters of bones were passed in remembrance.
"Meunter ijutande,"
I said quietly to myself as the others echoed Verlin's final thanks.
"What was that?" Priya asked, missing nothing I said or did.
"Just part of a Venden prayer of thanks."
"What does it mean?"
Aram asked.
"Never forgotten. It refers to the sacrifice that brought the meal to the table."
Samuel raised a suspicious brow.
"Sacrifice?"
"The labor, the animal. All gifts, including food, come with a cost to someone or something."
"You speak Venden?" Nash asked. "Will you teach me?"
I looked at Verlin. She nodded approval.
"Lien Chocabras, Kez Lo Mati," I said slowly, waiting for him to repeat. He struggled to repeat the words that were foreign to his tongue, but smiled with accomplishment when he finished.
"What did I say?"
"I'm hungry. Let's eat."
"I'm all for that,"
Uncle Caswin said and began eating. Everyone dug in, and Lydia and Nash practiced the words over and over as they giggled and slurped mouthfuls.
"You are clever," Verlin said abruptly. I lowered my spoon and eyed her, uncertain if it was a compliment or an accusation.
"Jace told me," she added. "He said you were resourceful in the wilderness."
"As was he," I answered. "We worked together and made the best of it."
Jelaine smiled.
"I'm sure you did." I couldn't see it, but I was certain Priya kicked Jelaine beneath the table because Jelaine jumped in her seat, then shot Priya an angry scowl. A rumble of heavy footsteps echoed just outside the dining room, and the doors flew open. Mason walked in, looked around, his eyes landing on me first, then Verlin.
"Sorry," he told her. "We won't make dinner tonight."
She asked for no further explanation, as if she had already expected this.
"We'll keep your plates in the warmer."
Mason turned back toward me.
"Jace would like to see you."
I spied two tiny crimson dots on his sleeve. Blood. A spray of blood, to be precise.
"Sounds ominous," I said, expecting him to laugh it off. He didn't.
"Ready?"
he asked. I pushed my chair back, my mind spinning with possibilities. Everyone watched me leave like I was on my way to an execution.
"How do you say goodbye in Venden?"
Lydia called.
Patresta, I answered. If it's a final goodbye.
Is this a final goodbye?
I didn't know, and Mason shuffled me out before I could answer.
Chapter 21, Cassie.
I have something for you to steal, Kazimira. I would do it myself, but as you can see, I'm unable to travel. And the truth is, regardless of my passion for this quest, you are the preeminent thief in Venda. But the prize I want is not a square of cheese or a soup bone. It is loud and large. What is the largest thing you've ever stolen? I had sensed that she already knew. It was spoken of in whispers on the streets. Did Ten really steal that? No, impossible. Why would she? But anonymity was essential in what I did if I wanted to keep doing it. The Queen didn't question the if or the what. She wanted to hear the how. Could I do it again? I thought back to my large, loud, and very dangerous acquisition. It had taken me more patience than I had thought I possessed, more than a month of many skipped meals, saving and stashing, and favors procured by stealing numerous other much smaller things. There was no doubt I had seen it as a challenge, but there was more to it than just that. The tiger had drawn a large crowd when the Pervisi driver rolled into the Jahendra. No one had seen one before or even knew what it was, but it was obvious it had to be one of the magical creatures of legend, and when it suddenly lunged and roared, the thunderous sound vibrated through my teeth. I watched three men fall back, wetting themselves. I also saw the thick iron collar and chain that kept the tiger from leaping from the back of the dray, and on closer inspection, I noticed that its glorious striped fur hung like a loose coat over its ribs. The Pervisi driver was, amazingly, unafraid of the beast. He shouted a command, then laughed and scratched the animal behind its ear when it lay down. The butcher had stepped forward, lusting for an animal that was good for soup bones at most. I watched him as he pulled on his beard, the skin puckered to attention around his eyes, his lips glistening as he licked them over and over again. And then he asked the Pervisi driver if he could make the beast bellow again. The roar. The fear it induced, the enormous white fangs. That was what the butcher lusted for, and it came as no surprise. And that was when I knew I would steal the tiger. Why, Cassie? Why steal something you had no use for? There was only one reason I could share with her. I wanted to let it go. I knew eventually the animal would die and the butcher would watch it happen, slowly, for it would have taken all of the butcher's precious meats displayed in his shop to properly feed such a beast, and he would never sacrifice his livelihood for an animal. Nor would he care day by day as he watched the tiger's ribs protrude, its cheeks hollow, and its flesh sag. He already saw that every day among his human patrons, and their suffering didn't sway him. Besides, he would profit from the tiger's death, too, selling its tough meat as magical, pulling its enormous teeth from its jaws for trade with other merchants. Selling patches of its striped hide to the Chievdars, and its clawed paws to governors who loved exotic trophies from the land beyond the Great River. When the last roar of the tiger was gone, death would be a bonus, bringing more rewards to the butcher. He paid a hefty sum to the Pervisi driver, but knew he would triple his investment in a few short months, and in the meantime, he would derive his ultimate pleasure from the fear he would sow, and he'd have yet another way to chase the undesirables from his stall. I had already experienced the fear he liked to spread 4 years earlier. My mother had been gone for only a handful of days.
I was lost without her, and my eyes itched with hunger. I had stumbled upon his shop, his skinned lambs hanging from hooks, a flurry of flies buzzing and tasting their slick pink flesh, his caged doves pecking at one another's bald heads, his mysterious pearlescent meats showing the rainbows of age, and I had stopped to stare, wondering how I might make such treasures mine, when I felt a sharp snap across my face. I hadn't even had time to reach up to touch my bleeding cheek when it slashed across my calves. And then I saw him laughing, watching my confusion. He lifted his willow switch and snapped it again, the lithe green branches cutting across my brow. I ran, but he yelled after me, warning me to stay away. Street rats with no money were less welcome than the flies that swarmed his meats. But the prize was something that could have easily turned and killed you. Was it worth risking your life? She had looked at me thoughtfully then. I knew the queen had the gift, but I didn't think she could read minds. Even so, she saw the answer in mine. Yes, it was worth it. Every missed meal was worth it. The grueling new depths of patience I had to learn were worth it. Every groveling favor I had to pay off was worth it. But there was more I couldn't tell her, a reason that hooked into my heart as sharply as a claw. It was the tiger's eyes, their beauty, their shine, their amber glow that had wrapped me so tightly with memory that I couldn't breathe. I saw the desperate brokenness in them that was masked behind a defiant roar. Shh, Cassie, don't move. In the flash of that moment, I already saw myself leading him across a rickety chain bridge, setting him free in a forest where he would roar, fierce, loud, and unbroken. At least, that was my hope for him, to be restored and free. The animal you steal for me will be even more dangerous, Cassie Myra. You must be every bit as careful and cunning, and above all, you must use every ounce of patience you possess. You must not be reckless with your own life, nor with those who are with you. This beast will turn and kill you. Cunning, careful, patient. I had always been patient. Even the simple stealing of a turnip or a mutton bone required waiting for opportunity to cooperate. It might take an hour or more. And when opportunity didn't present itself, more patience to create opportunity, or learning to juggle to distract a merchant, or telling them a puzzling riddle to make their minds tumble in different directions, abandoning their guard. The brass button theft alone had taken a week of planning and patience. The theft of the tiger, over a month, testing my limits, always unsure if the tiger would survive long enough for me to follow through with my plan, wanting to rush, but then holding back, my patience gnawed and eaten away like a worried bone. I thought nothing could be harder. But this theft of a traitor had complications I hadn't foreseen, namely Jace Ballinger. And now something else had gone wrong, something worse than a complication. I could hear it in Mason's deliberate footsteps and the long silence between us. I could taste it in the air, the foreboding tang of blood and anger. In Venda, when I sensed things going wrong, I could back out, silently walk away and disappear into a crowd. Move on to a different mark. Here, I couldn't do that. Patience, Cassie, patience. There is always more to draw from. It was a lie, I told myself. So far, I believed it, and that was all that mattered. I eyed the blood on Mason's sleeve. What business had suddenly taken them all by storm? Did they find Ren and Sanove? What if the blood was...
Why didn't Jace come and get me? I asked. Mason grinned. Am I really such a bad escort? Don't believe the rumors.
I always believe rumors.
Relax, there's nothing to be worried about.
When someone said that, it was precisely the time to be worried. I was only wondering.
Jace had to go clean up.
Clean up? He was spotlessly clean just a few hours ago. It must have been some very messy business you were taking care of.
It was. I knew I wasn't going to get anything more out of him.
Mason was tight in the inner circle. Family. One of many keystones firmly wedged and committed, and nothing could make his lips slip free for anyone outside that circle. I understood and admired that because one loose stone could make a whole bridge collapse. But unfortunately, his loyalty did nothing to help me. We reached the end of a long hall. Tiago and Drake stood on either side of the doors.
They're inside, Drake said, waiting.
Who? A salty taste swelled on my tongue. Patience, Kazi. The tiger is not yet yours. And I knew patience was the dividing line between success and failure. Mason opened the door, and we walked in. It was a small room, windowless, with dark paneled walls, but a candelabra in the corner provided soft golden light. Jace sat slumped in a chair, his boots propped up on the end of a long table, and Gunnar and Titus sat on either side of him. Gunnar reviewed scattered papers and carefully wrote on another. Jace jumped to his feet when I walked in. He had a new shirt on. He stared at me. His brown eyes that had once swallowed me whole with their warmth were cold and distant. The anger and blood I tasted in the air was not imagined.
Hello, Kazi, he said formally.
A fist pounded my sternum. It was death, fierce and strong, and I couldn't breathe. Who have you killed? I asked immediately, not waiting for any more formalities.
Who says,
I want to see Ren and Sinove, now! Jace walked to my side and took my elbow, trying to guide me to a seat.
Sit down. Your friends are fine, but we can't bring them here.
I yanked free. You don't really have them. Is that it? I asked, praying I was right. Praying he would confess this one truth to me. That's why you won't let me see them. Gunnar stood and retrieved something from a leather case on the floor. He threw two items onto the table. Ren's zeith clattered and spun on the polished wood. Sinove's leather archer glove slid as smooth and golden as warm butter toward me. Gunnar grunted.
We thought you might need some proof.
I let out a shuddering breath, letting them think it was fear instead of relief. I maintained my distressed expression, but inwardly I calmed. Now I knew, with little doubt, that they didn't have them. Each of Ren's blades had dyed leather wrapping the hilt. The red one was the spare she kept carefully wrapped and buried deep in her saddlebag. The blue and violet zeiths were her blades of choice and the ones she wore at her sides. Sinove's monogrammed archer glove was a gift from the queen, a spare she had not yet worn. She was too much in awe of it. The leather was still pristine and unblemished. Gunnar had only gotten hold of their saddlebags, perhaps taken by the magistrate at the livery while we were in town. If they actually had Ren and Sinove, they wouldn't have had to dig deep through their belongings. They could have taken items in plain sight at their sides. This doesn't mean they're alive. I saw the blood on Mason's shirt, I said, keeping up the charade. Titus shook his head.
She's a hard one to convince, Jace. I don't know how you spent all that time with her.
He threw a loosely wrapped packet on the table in front of me. I pulled a corner of the paper aside and choked back a gag.
Those look like your friend's ears?
Titus asked. No, I answered quietly.
Put them away, Titus,
Jay snapped. Titus wrapped the ears back in the blood-stained paper and set it aside. I tried to sort out how severed human ears played into this.
We've had more trouble in Hell's Mouth,
Jace said.
We need your help.
I looked down at the damson stain that Jace had carelessly overlooked on the toe of his boot. He saw me staring and drew my attention away, taking my arm and leading me to a seat at the table. They all took seats around me. They were sober as they laid it all out. They had found more labor hunters in town. That was the coldness I had seen in Jace's eyes, and now heard in his voice. His utter hatred for the scavenging predators. It was a hatred we shared, and was an especially fresh horror for both of us. I listened without interrupting, still wondering where my help came into play. They explained they were under attack by someone conspiring to oust them in a moment that the Ballingers appeared weakened. Jace said they were increasing defense and protections around the town, which would take care of the short term, but knowing a powerful sovereign was recognizing their authority with a visit would help calm nerves, support their right to rule, and might make whoever was orchestrating these attacks back off. They suspected it could be two or more leagues working in a concerted effort. I sat back, knowing where this was going. The appearance of more labor hunters had made Gunner's impulsive outburst rear its ugly head again. Then ask the King of Islandia to come here, I said. He has jurisdiction over Hell's Mouth. They all laughed, but it held no genuine mirth. I remembered Grizz rolling his eyes when he described the king. Apparently, the brothers held a similar opinion of him. Mason pushed back from the table.
The king is barely a king at all. He's a joke is what he is,
Titus added. Gunner's expression held similar contempt.
Except for drawing his 2% tax, he wouldn't know Hell's Mouth from a swamp in the Camelin Toe. Last time he was here, he only came looking for breeding stock for his farm, and then he was gone.
Mason sneered.
And the breeding stock he chose was more like a laughing stock. He's not even good at being a farmer. Like I said, Jace repeated, we need a powerful sovereign recognizing our authority. We need...
She won't come, I said flatly, cutting him off before he went any further. Gunner leaned forward.
She will if you write a letter requesting her to come to Tor's Watch. In fact, we've already written it. You just need to copy it in your hand and sign it.
He pushed a blank piece of paper toward me. I ignored Gunner and turned to Jace. They already believe she's coming, I said. Isn't that enough? I'm sure Gunner can weave more of his ridiculous lies when she doesn't show. Gunner's lips pulled tight against his teeth, his eyes smoldering with anger.
It would cost you nothing.
The coldness in Jace's voice receded. His gaze penetrated mine as if searching for a way to reach me. He knew it was a long shot. Still, among all the other things he could do, this mattered to him. It mattered to his family. Why?
What can a simple letter hurt?
He added. It couldn't hurt, and in some ways I sympathized with them. I hated labor hunters too, but this was about more than just turning Gunner's lie to truth. About more than labor hunters and attacks on Hell's Mouth. It ran deeper. The Ballinger weakness was showing. A thread pulled loose, a seam unraveling, their enormous pride exposed. They truly believed they were the First Kingdom,
and they wanted it recognized. I pulled the letter closer and read it slowly. I shook my head at the audacity. This is not how these things work. Titus tapped the table impatiently. It's the way they work here. It sounds more like a veiled threat.
Only because you choose to read it that way, Jace said.
It could take weeks for this to reach her, and then...
We have Valspray.
I paused, wondering how that was possible. The swift birds were from Dalbrek, trained by handlers and only gifted to the kingdoms in the last few years as a speedy form of communication between them.
The merchants in the arena offer a surprising array of goods,
Jace explained. Stolen goods. I wasn't terribly surprised. Valspray were only trained to fly between certain cities. Hal's Mouth was not one of them. He said that the Queen's reply via another Valspray would go to Parsis, but would be relayed back here by messenger in only a few days. They had it all figured out. Almost. And the almost was huge. The Queen would not come. She would never give them what they wanted. Legitimacy. Because they were thieves. That much the King of Islandia had voiced clearly. The Ballingers collected taxes from the citizens and then kept half the proceeds for themselves before sending the rest on. They had the gall to take a cut of everything in Hell's Mouth, even the king's purse, even the air that Vendens breathed. The king had told Grizz that the family had a stranglehold on the northern region, and he was at a loss for how to control them. Recognizing their right to rule was the furthest thing from any monarch's mind. But a letter could buy me a few more weeks here to search their compound for a traitor. Find Ren and Sanove, connect with Natia and the others, and be on our way with our prisoner, and, best of all, I might be able to address another problem in the process. The Queen would be more than pleased. Make a wish, Kazi. It seemed mine were coming true. The brothers anxiously stared at me, waiting. I'd let them taste victory for a few minutes, let its claws sink in good and deep, before I snatched it away again. I reached for the parchment and began copying it. I'll need to change some of the wording and include Ren and Sanove, or the Queen will know I didn't write this.
Small changes only, Gunnar said.
They hovered like duped merchants, stepping close to watch me juggle, watching every letter fall neatly into place, their anticipation building. Your Majesty, Queen of Venda. I'm writing to report that our investigations have gone well, but they did reveal some surprising revelations. The Ballinger dynasty is a vast and well-managed one, which is astonishing since it is not an easy world to rule. There are many threats to the citizens from outsiders, but the Ballingers are experienced and have protected them for untold centuries, long before any of the kingdoms were established. Their ways may not be like ours, but in this wild and untamed territory, they do what is necessary and the citizens of Hell's Mouth are grateful to them for their leadership and the protection they provide. We strongly request your presence here, acknowledging the work of the Ballingers and their authority to rule this region. We're settled in at Tor's Watch, taking in every aspect of their hospitality, and until you arrive, Ren, Sanove, and I will be staying on here. We're learning much. I set my pen down.
Why are you stopping?
Jace asked. I chewed on my nail as if thinking it over. Before I finish and sign, I do have one simple condition of my own. Jace's chest rose in a deep breath. He knew it would be anything but simple.
And that would be?
No conditions, Titus argued. Gunnar's eyes bulged.
Is she blackmailing us? Mason huffed out a disbelieving growl.
I think that's exactly what she's doing.
Only because you choose to read it that way, I said and smiled.